morning and welcome to Odyssey on WBEZ Chicago, 91.5 FM, Chicago Public Radio. I'm Gretchen Helfrich. President Bush's new Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives has raised a lot of concern about the separation of church and state and the possibility of constitutional problems arising from federal funding of religious organizations. Religious leaders have also expressed concern that entanglement with the government could compromise their religious mission. While these concerns may well be justified, the president's plan raises other questions as well about the extent to which government and non-governmental social services really can work as partners. Do both types of programs really share common goals? Do they benefit the same people? Should they be run in the same way? And if they differ in significant ways, are there limits to how well a partnership approach can work? Today we'll talk about some of these questions, and joining us on the program are Henrika McCoy, who is Director of Admissions and Financial Aid and also a clinical professor at the Jane Addams College of Social Work at the University of Illinois at Chicago. We're also joined by Cassandra McKay, who is also a clinical professor at the Jane Addams College, and Cale Williams, who is former executive director at the Leadership Council for Metropolitan Open Communities. He is currently a senior scholar at the Center for Urban Research and Learning at Loyola University Chicago. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining me. Let me begin with a broad question. In terms of what the government tries to accomplish by providing social services and what private organizations try to accomplish, are there any fundamental differences? Is everybody really trying to do the same thing, just in different ways? Or are there ways in which these are really different undertakings? Henrika McCoy.
Well, I think the basic principles of why social services exist are the same between government and secular organizations. I think that often they're delivered in a different fashion, but the basic goal of empowering people and providing services is the same.
How do they differ?
I think that because faith-based and secular organizations often don't have the same federal guidelines that they have to adhere to, they're able to provide perhaps services to a broader population, to people who are looking for services without stigmatization. And they don't have those same guidelines, so they can provide services that people are looking for but are unable to access through the government due to lack of resources and lack of funds.
Cale Williams, what do you think?
I think there are some advantages in social services provided by united by nonprofit agencies. I think they tend to be more efficient. They're less bound by bureaucratic rules. They're able to be more innovative in the services they provide. On the whole, I think that if I were choosing for my family, a social service provider, I would prefer a nonprofit.
All right. Cassandra McKay?
For community-based organizations, I'm more in favor of those because they're more connected to the community. They're connected to the community that they serve. For a government organization, it almost has to be more broad because it's government, because it's larger, and it doesn't have a face. A community organization, whether it be religious or secular, has more contact with the people that it serves. There's more of an acceptance there. So the stigma is not as apparent as it would be for a government agency.
What do you mean by connectedness? The people providing the service and the people getting the services are more closely linked?
In most cases where there is a community organization, that community has accepted that organization to thrive. If that organization is thriving in the community, that means that if there's a community involvement, they've accepted that being a part of their community. So there may be people who work in that organization who also live in the community. So they're more dedicated to making sure that there's a service that's provided and it's a quality service.
Henrika McCoy, can I ask you, in response to what Cale Williams was saying about the advantages of non-governmental organizations, efficiency, fewer bureaucratic regulations, more room for innovation, are there advantages or virtues, let's use that word, to government-provided services? And if so, what are they?
I think perhaps one significant advantage is there can be more funding available. And I say can be because I don't think that that's always the case. But definitely with secular and faith-based organizations, they're reliant on donations, they're reliant on charitable contributions, and some do receive federal funds, but the reality is the amount of money that they're able to use to provide services is limited. So the government does have an advantage in that way, that taxpayer dollars provide a lot more funds and therefore can provide a lot more services when funds are directed effectively.
What about the reasoning behind or the motivation for providing the services? I'm forced to wonder whether, in terms of the government doing it, there isn't a mix of motivations, different people who form the political constituency behind the government. We can talk about the government, but I mean, we're talking about society, electing legislators who approve these programs. And these people are motivated by widely different goals. And I would assume, but correct me if I'm wrong, that in non-governmental organizations, there's more of a coherent understanding of mission. Mm-hmm. Is that true? And if so, what does that yield on either side of the equation?
Cassandra McKay? Especially for community-based organizations, as well as faith-based organizations, there is a mission focus. There's a vision. This is what we've set out to do. This is why we have formed as an organization, not so as government. Government is providing funds to alleviate a problem that is a societal problem or societal ill. For organizations within the community, there is a mission. There is something that we see within our community that we want to help eradicate or help deal with. So it's very different. I think that government, you cannot be as focused as you can be on a local level. However, there still needs to be a partnership because the local level needs money to provide for their community.
Kale Williams?
Well, the federal money comes from Congress, where a variety of interests eventually reach a compromise and pass a bill, but with lots of little, in many cases, lots of little requirements in there or definitions that limit it. And technically, the nonprofit agencies are free of that. Actually, for many of the services, those agencies are already receiving federal funds, and that conflict between the sense of mission in the community-based organization and the requirements that come with the federal funding, even though it may be passed through the state or the city, is a problem for all of those service providers.
In terms of having to answer to a new master, so to speak?
Having to answer to a new master, having to have certain kinds of credentials mm-hmm. in the staff, having to use certain procedures in their counseling efforts, mm-hmm. And having to produce certain results with the funding tied to those results, all of those tend to limit the mission-oriented purpose of the community organizations, and there's a compromise because they, as was said, they need the money.
Well, let me ask this. You've raised an interesting question, and since we are here in Chicago and we have with us representatives of the Jane Addams College, naturally the question of professionalization arises. Jane Addams and Chicago are, of course, sort of rightly proud of having developed a tradition of professionalization in the social services. And when you talk about, Kale Williams, when you talk about credentials of staff and ways of providing things, that gets to the issue of professionalization. So I'm wondering a couple things. One, can there be a sort of division of labor between those aspects of social service delivery that need to be professionalized and those that can be done under more informal circumstances? And if so, does that division correspond in any way to a sort of government, non-government division?
I think it has to be an issue of quality across the board, regardless if someone carries a professional license or someone doesn't have a professional license, they have to be providing quality services. And if the quality services are only based on whether this person carries a license or not, I don't think it makes a difference. It makes a difference as far as the mission statement of that particular organization, that they're going to provide quality services. They're going to provide training, whether it be for credentialing for their staff or they're going to train the staff so they provide quality services. So professionalism, that's one thing, but quality is something different. You can provide services and have a license, but it may not be quality services. So I think we have to define what is quality, and then we could talk about professionalism.
Henrika McCoy?
Well, I agree, but I also do think that you know, many of our best providers in terms of community service agencies are people who experienced whatever those difficulties were themselves and began an agency. I mean, when we look back at grassroots organizing, we look at how many of our organizations have come into play, it's because there were people who were working with their next door neighbor or working in their community and recognized the problem and began to develop an agency to address that problem. And a lot of those agencies still exist. So I agree it's about quality, and the other piece about professionalism is very true, because we recognize that many of the ills that the society is dealing with does take a certain type of information that you need to know, but it doesn't always necessarily come from an academic environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about specific specific measures of quality. I mean, when we're talking about a broad range of potential services that might be provided, that are provided and that might be involved in this new plan, can you speak a little bit specifically about, I don't know, areas where a higher level of stringent standards is required? Are there other areas where, you know, less formal or less standardized approaches are perfectly valid?
Well, I think in this time and day that we're looking at how much money is being spent for social services and what's the result. We're very results oriented. In any type of social services, there is some type of demand that we have to have some type of results as a result of what we're doing. So as far as quality goes, there has to be some way to evaluate what we're doing, whether it be that we're only going to have so many days to provide services for this person, and they have to be on their way. I think it's hard to say as far as what we're really looking for. Sometimes you can't define what social services is going to look like and what's the product's going to be. That's almost like a cause and effect, and social services doesn't operate in that type of realm.
Kale Williams?
I have an example, and that is in providing services for children who have no parents or who have been taken from their parents. The state's main emphasis now is called permanency, to have mm-hmm. those children adopted into a family that has been counseled and prepared and assisted to become good parents. Now, the state's measure is how many kids did you move to permanency in this period. That's not necessarily the best measure.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And we need to find ways to avoid the risk that, you know, that they'll just churn them through to meet that goal mm-hmm. on which their next year funding mm-hmm. depends, rather than being sure that that's absolutely the best place for that child and that family is fully prepared.
But let me play with that example a little bit, because if you want to say that permanency isn't necessarily the best standard to use for evaluating success, okay, I can understand that, and that would seem to suggest that would call for more conversation and discussion about what the goals are and how to identify them and how to evaluate them. But a question I would have is, can you envision a situation where the goals for or the measures for evaluating success would be different depending on who's providing the service? In other words, might it be the case that permanency is a good goal for one agency but not a good goal for another agency? Or is it, if you had a good standard, do you think it would apply across the board?
Standards should apply across the board. I mean, if it's a standard, it's a standard. If it's a standard for treatment, it's a standard across the board. And for it to be less of a standard at one place than the other, then it's almost saying something else about that organization and something else about the people who either have to go to that organization for services, that they don't need this high standard that everyone else has to adhere to.
And I think in that example, permanency is a wonderful goal to have across the board. I think what becomes at issue is the plan or the track that got you to permanency. Mm-hmm. And if the goal is to achieve permanency to decrease the number of children in the system, then that's not necessarily the best treatment plan to use, the treatment plan to use to get there. Because then the issue becomes, is this a good home for that child? Mm-hmm. What is the success of the home after permanency has achieved? How many of those adoptions fail, et cetera, et cetera. So it's the track to getting to the goal that I often think is not really looked at. The goal is permanency, but what about the plan to get there? And that's where it fails.
And sometimes with that, you're dealing with the societal ills that are a larger picture. If you have only 18 months, per se, to move toward permanency, then you're also dealing with some of the other things that you can't control for. And so that's...
Such as? Give some examples.
If there's a substance abuse problem, for instance, if we're dealing with a parent-child situation, and you're only allotting for so much time for this parent to get them, you know, to deal with their substance abuse, but you're not really looking at treatment. You're looking at just a kind of a panacea, something to put a Band-Aid on, not really dealing with that. So then your goal is really not appropriate. We're looking at things that we're trying to make them hard and fast, and social services is a soft issue. You can't always measure it the same way we would measure mathematics. So it's a little bit different, and we have to be conscious of what it is that we're setting out for a goal and evaluating that.
And I think along...
Go ahead.
Along with that, it's just an unrealistic expectation of what should occur during that time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if a child has been in a home where they've been abused for 5 years, you cannot expect in 18 months that no matter how intensive the treatment, that perhaps you find a home for that child to be adopted into, that it will be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've had difficulty with building relationships, with trust, et cetera, et cetera. And that's not realistic. And so the likelihood is that unless it's an adoptive home that is willing to work with that child to continue with treatment, to, if medication is necessary, whatever, unless those things happen, the adoption will likely fail. And I think often that gets lost because what happens is, oh, the child's adopted, life is great, we can move on. And that's not going to often be the case.
Now, Kale Williams, I would infer from what you said earlier that you think that non-government agencies have more flexibility to make more nuanced decisions, to set more flexible criteria about, for example, in the situation, the hypothetical situation that's being described, to use different measures to evaluate the success and not just a single measure of it's done, there's a placement, we're through.
In theory, yes, but if they're accepting government funds, those come with guidelines and requirements, and you're both visited and inspected as to your procedures, and you are graded when you make your application for refunding and how well you did in the past year under goals that are set not by you. Well, sometimes there's some discussion, but they basically have to be approved by the agency, usually a state agency, that controls the funds.
So you think there should be some separation between private provision of social services by private agencies, faith-based and non-faith-based, and government agencies, or just less imposition of rules on the private agencies by the government
the latter,
to go with the funding?
Latter. I think the problems are so numerous and vast that it's unlikely that private philanthropy will ever meet them. So you need tax-generated dollars. But I think that in the quest for efficiency and being able to prove results to your constituents in a legislature or in the voting public, that the government agencies often err on the side of making the standards too rigorous and not understanding the real processes that need to take place.
Comments? You're both nodding.
Well, I think, yeah, you're right. As far as the government is too rigorous, and that's where the marriage needs to come in with the government and the community-based organization, whether it be religious or secular, that there needs to be an understanding of these are the standards and this is how we will implement this. And instead of someone kind of demanding this is the way that you're going to reach this goal, but have an understanding of how, what it takes to reach the goal, what it takes to reach the goal for permanency, what it takes to reach the goal for sobriety. There are a lot of different things that we cannot just put a timeline on and say that you've got 28 days to get it together and you need to be all right after that. You can't do that. You have to be conscious of what really takes place in that treatment process. So there needs to be a marriage between government and local organizations to understand how we're actually going to deal with the issues that present us.
And, you know, you asked earlier actually about kind of the fundamental differences, I think, between government and secular or non-secular organizations. And I think perhaps one significant difference that it seems to be coming up is really the idea of empowerment, which is what social work is about. And I think a lot of the community-based and religious and faith-based organizations are based on really empowering the persons that they're trying to provide services to. And that's not necessarily, I think, the fundamental belief of government.
Mm-hmm.
Government is designed in their social services to provide services to people, to move them forward, to get them away from social ills, to make society better, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not necessarily about empowerment. It's not about how do you get there and what are the goals and what is the track to achieve that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one significant difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, but is it a difference of empowerment is sort of a tool to accomplish the government's end? I mean, when the end is still to get the person off social services?
Well, I think empowerment is a fundamental belief around how do you deal with people and clients and what their problems are. Empowerment is not about you helping someone. It's about them really being able to utilize the tools that are there so that they can achieve that goal. And I don't always think that that's what the government's philosophy is in terms of providing services.
Well, this sort of gets back to another question, which has to do with the way you just put it, the government's philosophy, the philosophy behind why the services are being provided. You know, the government has people to answer to, the voters, legislators, voters, mm-hmm. and say, you know, well, here's what we did. Look, you know, mm-hmm. we've accomplished this. And it doesn't seem like, it seems like for a faith-based organization or even many non-faith-based organizations, there's a sense in which the organization itself benefits in some way, morally or ethically or spiritually, by undertaking to provide these services. And that doesn't seem to be necessarily part of what the government is about. In other words, people in a church who do this sort of work gain something as religious people by engaging in it in a way that is not the case with all of us as representatives of the government.
Well, I would disagree. I think for religious-based organizations, it's the same idea as far as empowerment. It's the same idea as far as teaching someone who may be down on their luck or may have have come to source with some issues that they're trying to deal with, to empower them of how to deal with it, how to cope. I think it's the same way I would hope for the government. It's the same way, not to just, here, let me put a Band-Aid on this bullet wound, per se, but to really deal with the fact that let me teach you how to get through this situation, this scenario. So it's still empowerment. I feel that the faith-based organizations are not doing it just because, you know, I'll feel better.
Oh, I certainly didn't mean just because.
Okay, but it's okay. But it's also the idea of that I'm going to help someone because I might have been in that same predicament.
Well, go ahead, Kay Williams.
I think it's a mistake to distinguish faith-based from secular social service agencies in terms of motivation and psychic rewards and so forth. I think I've worked in both kinds, and I think they're very, very similar. And I think probably on an individual basis, the same is true of government legislators and administrators. But the government has to protect itself in a variety of ways because it answers to so many people, and it has such a broad constituency that it has to build in a whole set of what we call bureaucratic rules, each of them designed to avoid a problem or to cure a problem that has come up in the past. And the combination of those is what makes it more difficult and why a secular or faith-based community organization can be more flexible and more responsive to the person right in front of them at that moment.
Are any of you concerned that in trying to advance the idea of partnerships between government and other social service organizations, that might change the government or political understanding of responsibility for these problems?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely think that, you know, part of, you know, as we know, many government programs are not working. And I definitely think that really part of the underlying motive here is for the government to now set up a competition, obviously, between government organizations, faith-based and community initiatives to compete for the same money, get the money. More than likely, and this is just kind of my opinion, those organizations will get the money versus the government. And a lot of these organizations will have to change their mission. They will have to change some of their standards in order to meet the federal guidelines to get these dollars. And as they fail, or if they fail, the government will no longer have to say it was our responsibility. We gave the money to these organizations. Look what they've done. It hasn't worked, but it's not our fault because we didn't do it. So I definitely think that.
What about Kay Williams? Do you agree?
I think there are real problems. And I think that the most of the interest since the recent announcement of President Bush have been on the faith-based organizations and the extent to which what has already been enacted into law in certain programs would be expanded to many others. The program was called the Charitable Choice Program, adopted first in 1996, and that seems to open the way to the provision of services in religious settings. There have been lots of religiously based organizations who have had federal and state money for social services for years now, but under the requirement that they provide them in a neutral setting, a religiously neutral setting, the charitable choice and rallying the armies of compassion, which is the term that President Bush used, now allows in certain programs and would allow in more programs that the services could be provided in a religious setting with all of the accoutrements of that, scripture on the walls and icons and other symbols present, and even the use of that particular religion's principles as part of the counseling that goes on with families. And I think for some of us, that really raises the flags of a violation of the basic principle of an independent religious presence in society and a separation of that from government.
Well, I don't know if I have a different take on this, but I feel that this is a democracy. So we all, as taxpayers, we're pulling our money to pay for things that we need within this country. Okay. And it almost sounds as though government, there's a mentality of us and them, and that the local organizations are one entity and government is something different. And it doesn't seem, there needs to be, yes, a separation of church and state in the sense that you allow for self-determination of the individual. You never impose beliefs upon one individual because they're seeking services. But there seems to be, well, if the government is supposed to take care of all of this, and then the local community doesn't have to worry about it. There needs to be a collaboration of between government and local communities dealing with the social ills that we have within the country, not just within a particular neighborhood, but within the country as a whole. Certain things happen because it's happening across the nation, not just because a particular area. So there still needs to be some type of collaboration, some well-thought-out plan to allow for that, but all the while being conscious of we're never imposing upon any individual as far as the beliefs that particular organization has, but we're always empowering and we're always allowing for self-determination of the individual.
All right, let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We're talking today about social services and the proposal, the Bush administration's creation of an Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, and who does what well in the provision of social services. We're joined by Cassandra McKay, clinical professor in the Jane Addams College of Social Work at the University of Illinois at Chicago. We're also joined by Henrika McCoy, who's from the Jane Addams College. She's a clinical professor there and director of admissions and financial aid. And Cale Williams, former executive director at the Leadership Council for Metropolitan Open Communities and currently a senior scholar at the Center for Urban Research and Learning at Loyola. We will take some phone calls as well at 312-832-3124. 312-832-3124. This is Odyssey. I'm Gretchen Helfrich, and you're listening to WBEZ Chicago.
Support for this WBEZ program is provided by Navy Pier. Information about the activities and events taking place at the pier this week can be accessed online at www.navypier.com. Support for this WBEZ program is provided by Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry, offering a large selection of loose diamonds, custom mountings, jewelry, and watches. Now open in Aurora, Skokie, Orland Park, and St. Charles.
From the modern jazz quartet composer and pianist John Lewis to hip guitarist John Scofield, funky blues organist Jimmy Smith, or mellow Diane Reeves singing the songs of Sarah Vaughan. These are just a few of the new albums that you'll hear here on WBEZ. Music begins weeknights at 8 on Chicago Public Radio, 91.5 FM, WBEZ Chicago.
You're listening to Odyssey on Chicago Public Radio, 91.5 FM, WBEZ Chicago. I'm Gretchen Helfrich. We're talking today about social services and who provides them and who does what well in light of the government's, President Bush's proposal to create an Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. We'll take some phone calls in a few minutes at 312-832-3124. Henrika McCoy, let me ask this. Just plain and simple, are there some services or some activities that only the government ought to be doing and nobody else, that are purely and totally the responsibility of the government?
No, I don't think so. I think that everyone should help out. I think there's enough social ills and enough social problems that you can never provide too many services.
Cale Williams or Cassandra McKay, do you think that there are any things that the government ought to be doing exclusively?
I think the provision of cash benefits needs to be a government responsibility. And the surround for that, the soft services that Sandra talked about, are better done by secular and faith-based organizations.
Are you talking about cash benefits directly to people?
Yes.
Or just funding for services?
Well,
like welfare or TANF benefits.
Right. Those benefits, the earned income tax credit and so forth, those things I think really need to be done by government.
Yeah, I would agree. The benefits, the cash benefits, need to come from government. Again, the soft services would be more applicable at the community local level.
Henrika McCoy, you raised an issue a while ago about what social services are and how we define them. Can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, what is this cluster of things that we're talking about? And is it important to sort of draw a line around the things that are social services and other things?
Well, I guess a prime example is what we just talked about. I guess from my own perception, something like cash benefits is not a social service. So for me, the idea of social services are really programs and are policies that are designed to empower people, and that can be via mental health counseling, foster care, special education. I think there's a wide variety of, I guess, quote-unquote soft services that, in my mind, are what defines social services.
Does it include health care? Physical health care besides, in addition to mental health care?
It can include health care. I think, you know, health care in itself is a whole other realm, but it depends on, you know, in itself, then what are you defining as healthcare? But I most certainly think that things such as hospice, things as providing free immunizations or free healthcare, those are definitely, to me, social service programs.
Anyone want to add to that definition or change it?
Well, when we talk about healthcare, I don't know if that would be a soft service. I don't know if I would agree with that as a soft service. I think that that's, as a taxpayer, I would hope we would move to a point where certain things are privileges for being a citizen of the U.S. And soft services to me would entail more mental health services, services that would help or aid in need of a crisis or a situation that's debilitating, not necessarily health services. I wouldn't want to put that in the same lump because I think that then we would get very confused as far as what that really is. So I would kind of divide the two. And health services would probably be more something I would hope to be something that would be a privilege that we could have here in the U.S.
Cal Williams?
I tend to agree with both of my colleagues here, but because I think there is a difference between the way healthcare services and other social services are administered, but the line gets pretty porous at times, and it can't, in my view, be a very sharp distinction.
I mean, something like addiction counseling presumably would count as a social service, but you could also consider that healthcare, a type of healthcare.
Exactly.
Right. There's obviously some fluid line.
Prenatal services would early childhood care would be a place where there's a very porous line, and you need good healthcare provision, and you also need the sensitivity that comes from social work training.
All right, let's take some phone calls. 312-832-3124 is our number. Let's talk with Mike. Good morning, Mike. You're on Chicago Public Radio. Oops, we can't hear Mike, so we're going to go back to Mike in just a few minutes. In the meantime, let's talk. Okay, hold on. We're not going to talk with Richard at the moment. 312-832-3124 is our number, 312-832-3124. Okay, we're having a little trouble with our phone. So we're going to sort out the phone problem and get back to the phone calls in a few minutes. So I guess I would like to ask each of you whether you think that a program, any program, not necessarily the specific proposal offered by the Bush administration, but a program where more tax dollars are going to support organizations that do social service work, do you think that is an opportunity? I mean, is that, if you could sort of control all the variables, do you think that is a potentially positive step, Cassandra McKay?
As far as just providing services to the organizations, there should be more money going out. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know whether it amounts to more money, but whether funding non-government agencies is a good positive idea.
I think it's a good positive idea in the sense that if you are funding these agencies not for a political stance, but you're funding the agencies because the agencies can provide quality care. If they're not providing quality care, then it really doesn't matter where the funds are going to. If they're providing quality care, then of course, if those agencies are those that warrant to receive more funding, then of course they should go to non-governmental agencies.
Kayla Williams and Rico McCoy?
I think the idea of putting a lot more money into local nonprofit social service agencies is excellent. I think they're the best way to deal with those organizations provide the best ways of dealing with these issues and have proved that over time. And I personally think that the current or the pre-charitable choice situation in which many nonprofit faith-based agencies got federal money but provided the services in a neutral setting is a much healthier way for the whole society. And I have qualms about the use, the opening this up completely to settings in which the faith-based providers do so not in a separate building or in a neutral setting, but almost in the sanctuary itself.
Mm. Henrika McCoy?
I guess the key word in your question is if I could control it. So if I could control it, it's a wonderful idea. But I think as the proposal as it stands, I do have a lot of concerns about it in terms of, you know, the reality is our not-for-profit agencies, be it secular or faith-based, don't have enough money. And so my concern is that they have a wonderful mission of wanting to reach as many people as they can, and that ultimately they may have to change some of those their standards to obtain those funds. And so that's probably one of my largest concerns about the initiative. So as it stands, it's not something that I could support, but with other criteria and other, you know, very clear-cut guidelines regarding how the funds are distributed, what is a measure of success, what defines a religious organization, what defines a community initiative, et cetera, with those guidelines, I would be a little bit more optimistic about it.
All right, now we're going to try to take some phone calls again. 312-832-3124. Let's talk with Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Hi there.
Hi,
can
thanks.
You hear me now?
I can. It was my fault. Whoa. Thanks for your patience.
Okay. I'm a clinical social worker, and I've been in practice for over 20 years. I've worked in state programs, and I've worked in private agencies, secular and religious-based. There's a point that Mr. Williams was starting to touch on that I think is being overlooked, and that is currently in Illinois, each of the religious organizations, such as the Catholic Church, the Lutherans, Jewish agencies, have to organize a nonprofit social service arm so that the federal money, federal state money that comes in is channeled through those agencies. At this point, the 96 charitable choice is an untested constitutional question that's being built on. So it may be, in fact, a house of cards that we're looking at. But there are some real deep concerns. And I think that the outcome measures that are being talked about, you know, are process measures, and those are measures that wind up being imposed on a number of agencies mm-hmm. that tend to squash any kind of creativity because it becomes a standardization.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get some response to Mike's comments. Henrika McCoy?
I agree. I most certainly think that that is the one of my largest concerns is regarding the standards. And part of why many of these organizations succeed is because of their creativity and because of the new ways that they may approach problems based on what their particular community needs. And when you begin having to meet those federal standards, no matter what they are, that may change. And the reality is many of our, you know, as he pointed out, many of them do currently receive federal funds under another arm. But there are only a few organizations that are able to do that when we look at the entire scope of the number of social service organizations that exist. And as a result of that, how many people are not able to receive services? Are they only able to provide services in a certain area? I mean, there's a whole other piece to receiving government contracts, which will determine who you can provide services to in terms of where they live and where they don't live, and what people in terms of a population are being left out as a result of that.
Now, we should maybe clarify the difference between what has been going on for years with groups like Catholic Charities and what charitable choice allows, and this new proposal would include, has to do with creating an organization within your religious organization that is not religious. In other words, it's nonprofit, so that you couldn't use the federal money to build a new parish mm-hmm. hall or build right. a new house for the bishop. You have this separate sort of firewall between your religious activities and your social service activities, and that would be more fluid mm-hmm. now under the new proposals.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly the way it's defined, and the way a lot of the religious groups who have championed this move are looking forward to it eagerly, that they see it as a great victory that the federal government will now can go directly to the religious institution, to the church or the synagogue or the mosque. They have to keep a separate accounting in their financial ledger, but they can do it in the religious, in their own religious context.
Cassandra, okay?
Well, yeah, that's where I have a problem with this, is because I don't understand the purpose of changing. If this was working in the beginning, why change it now where there's an opportunity? And from my own personal beliefs, still why there's an opportunity to impose possibly something on someone who's receiving services, possibly from a faith-based organization. The imposing piece and disallowing the right for an individual to choose ways that they would want to be served are a concern for me, because then that begins to dictate what type of religious organizations we're looking at, and are we beginning to discriminate between different types of religions because we allow for that firewall basically to disintegrate, and it becomes more fluid, and then you lose the purpose of just helping someone to moving toward the purpose of imposing possibly something else on that person when they're only coming for service.
All right, let's take some more calls at 312-832-3124. Let's talk with Richard. Good morning, Richard. You're on Chicago Public Radio.
Good morning. I fully support faith-based organizations helping people, but I really have a problem with its constitutionality. Supreme Court has struck down attempts, for example, to fund teaching of math and science for parochial schools. What I think the way it should be done is through a credit. And that keeps the government out. That allows religious and non-religious charitable organizations to do their things the most effective manner possible. And if that involves a faith content, then so be it. And I personally believe that's the way to go and would like your comments on it.
What do you mean by a credit?
You can take tax deductions for charitable organizations. A credit is something like a deduction, but it's more. If you, for example, your tax bill is $10,000 based on whatever your income is, and the government would allow you, for example, to take 30% a tax credit against that bill, you could donate $3,000 a year and write it and pay only $7,000 towards your tax bill. $3,000 would be a credit.
So you mean if you gave $3,000 towards a charitable organization?
Rather than giving it to the federal government.
Right. So to maintain the funding only through individual contributions rather than direct government payments.
Right. And the federal government's only involvement is what it does now is certify as a charitable organization entitled to receive tax-deductible contributions.
All right. Let's get some response to that.
Well, that I understand we can do that now up to a certain limit. And it's one of the proposals that President Bush's plan is that there would be some tax credit for charitable contributions, even for people who do not itemize.
Which would make it easier for people to get the tax benefit of making a contribution.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it would also make it easier for them to take the benefit without making the contribution, mm-hmm. because it would be up to their word to as to whether they in fact made the contribution. But that would presumably generate more money for private charitable organizations, both secular and non-secular.
So what is gained or lost by having a direct transfer of government funds to these organizations rather than relying on the personal contribution route? I would think it would be a lot more money if you're talking about tax money from the government rather than just relying on charitable contributions from individuals. Enrica McCoy?
No, I agree. I mean, I definitely think that, you know, tax dollars would generate a lot more money because, you know, reportedly they would get to apply and those funds would go to specific organizations versus when you're using individual people donating money. It may be that, you know, Catholics get a lot more money than perhaps another group because perhaps their group of people is smaller, or the people who are able to donate to that organization is smaller, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that if you look at it in terms of a credit, more than likely those organizations would not benefit as greatly if you're thinking of it just in terms of finances.
But I'm still concerned. Are we saying then that I'm all about quality of service? So if we're saying that the faith-based organizations, the community-based organizations are providing a higher quality of service than governmental organizations, then fine, then we should allow for more money to flow. We still need to be able to set a type of standard. And And the tricky part here now is for faith-based organizations, for them not to lose their mission, for them not to lose their focus of why they began to provide services. But if we're saying that these organizations have shown that they show more quality of services, then fine. But we have to be conscious of why we're allowing for this floodgate to open.
All right, let's take one more call. Let's talk with Nina. Good morning, Nina. You're on Chicago Public Radio.
Hi, I have a question regarding the medical services that you guys addressed earlier and how great it would be if the government was able to provide medical services to everyone who's registered as a citizen. However, that is not necessarily the case in that there are single women and single men who fall through the cracks of the government assistance programs. And so there are faith-based agencies and private agencies who are able to provide those services through physicians donating their time, nurses donating their time. And if agencies were able to receive more money to address these issues, I think it would benefit everyone in the end.
Any responses? Cassandra McKay?
And yeah, and I think that that's where the local agencies will cover the gap. And I think that that's the marriage there, that the government provides this, but then there are gaps that, because the government is so large, cannot cover. So on a local basis, then those gaps will be covered by what it is that people contribute their time, they contribute their monies, their efforts to making sure that everyone is cared for.
Any other comments? Enrique McCoy, Kale Williams?
I think an awful lot depends. We really don't know a couple of things in the present initiative. We don't know what additional federal programs will be made available to, and we don't know how much money is going to be provided. And we don't know how it's going to be divided up. Is it going to focus on substance abuse or early childhood education? All of those have been mentioned even in President Bush's statement, but we don't know those things. And although I have qualms about the opening up faith-based opportunities, I think it's going to happen. And I think we all need to pay a lot of attention to the details as they begin to come out, and they'll eventually be decided by our Congress, and we need to be in touch with them.
Enrique McCoy, a quick final thought?
I think just that the reality, in my opinion, is that both government, secular, and faith-based or community initiatives need to coexist, because the reality is there's enough social services that need to be provided, and they both can't be in the same place at the same time and really serve the population.
All right. Henrika McCoy is Director of Admissions and Financial Aid and a clinical professor at the Jane Addams College of Social Work at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Cassandra McKay is a clinical professor there as well. And Kale Williams is former executive director at the Leadership Council for Metropolitan Open Communities. And currently he's a senior scholar at the Center for Urban Research and Learning at Loyola University Chicago. Thank you all very much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks also to Joshua Andrews for producing and directing. Thanks to Mike Gilmore and Veronica Williams for engineering. Thanks to everyone who called. And apologies to those whose calls we couldn't get to. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about dreams. This is Odyssey. I'm Gretchen Helfrich, and you're listening to WBEZ Chicago.
From the hand of a government man came these papers, came these signs, came these good things.